Coming up next, WWER presents Your Care Partners, a show dedicated to providing support and education to our community about caregiving. Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place your home. Experienced professional caregivers Jill White and Marty Allman have casual conversations about care, offering advice and tips to help navigate caring for others. Jill White is a certified dementia practitioner and an Alzheimer's Association facilitator for caregiver support groups with over 30 years' experience working in long-term care. Marty Allman is certified as a master trainer for the Best Friends approach to Alzheimer's. She is a certified psychiatric nursing assistant with over 20 years' experience working in long-term care.
Welcome to WWER 88.1 FM, Colonial Beach. I'm Marty Allman.
And I'm Jill White.
And we're your care partners. Today's topic is things you can do with your loved one who may have memory impairment or the beginning stages of Alzheimer's. Because in my opinion, what we want to do is keep people feeling productive, needed, and stimulated.
Definitely.
So over the years, working in healthcare and working with folks with Alzheimer's, there has been a list of things that you can do with people with Alzheimer's, and it's been compiled over the years. And actually one of my favorite things, which I've talked about before on other podcasts is, you know, if your person enjoyed, for instance, being, you know, a homemaker, or cooking, a really simple thing to do is just go get a bag of beans, or from the grocery store and have them snap off the ends of the beans and separate the tops from the beans and then cook the beans together. It brings people so much satisfaction and it stirs up conversation and memories of the past.
I was going to say memories of the past, especially. I know we've both had lots of experiences with folks that were not very communicative, you know, where they were in their progression of the disease, but presented with a familiar recipe, sometimes one of their own, it just triggered all those muscle memories and they were able to go through the process and join in and prepare foods again. And they get such joy out of it.
Right. The smells, the sounds, tasting. There are other activities at home. Another one of our residents' favorites, which really was so much fun for them, is we had people save coupons. Now everything's digital, but I think you can still get coupons and things from newspapers. And even the sales ads, you just tell them that they're coupons and have them cut them out and then sort and separate them and, you know, maybe do some meal planning or that sort of thing. Our residents really, really love that. And that sparked ideas for them, you know, oh, hey, let's, you know, do this activity or something like that.
I think triggering their memories is key to getting them invested and engaged. And like you said before, feeling productive and doing something they're comfortable doing because they don't have to think about it. They don't have to worry about it. They just kind of, you know, beating an egg or stirring a recipe. It's just kind of comes naturally to them again. And, or folding laundry, you know, some of the more menial tasks our residents used to actually enjoy doing them. normal daily activities.
Yeah. And I think too, there's a part of people that realize that, you know, you are helping them and are taking care of them. And so they feel like they're being a part of the process and helping as well, or they're helping you out. And that's another thing, you know, getting people started on these little activities. You know, it's good to say, hey, I need your help. That's a really good way to get somebody to start an activity, because they might think, oh, this is kind of childish, or why am I doing this? But if you enlist their help, I need your help, I've got to get this done, but I have these other things I need to do, could you help me?
Yeah.
That tends to get them interested.
Yeah, they're eager to help often. They feel good that they can actually do something that, you know, to help somebody else. And keeping them active, keeping their brain stimulated, so many different ways to do that through the course of a day. If you think about all the things you do through the course of the day without even thinking about it, if you break those down into tasks, each one of them can be productive and helpful.
Right. Something as simple as, you know, just a wet cloth. If you're not comfortable with, you know, your person having, you know, cleaning chemicals or something like that, just a wet cloth. And, hey, would you mind, you know, wiping these counters down? Or, oh, I've got these, you know, these dusty items. They've been up on the shelf for a long time and we're going to have company soon. You think you could, you know, help me dust them?
Yeah.
With this?
Polishing silver.
Yeah.
Or, you know, whatever you have, if you don't happen to have any silver, but anything like that, that again was watering plants, you know, like I said, so many things. Feather duster. I think I remember one of the first stories I heard of a woman that had moved into resident of a nursing home and was kind of bored and sitting around doing nothing. And one day she spotted the housemaker going past her and she asked if she could borrow the feather duster. And then, so her job was feather dusting all around, and she loved it, and it got her moving and active and engaged. And, you know, I mean, simple little things like that are really more important. We lose sight of it because to us it's menial tasks.
Right.
But each one is really important and needs to be done.
Right. You know, and I may have told this story before, but when I was caring for my dad and he was ill and he didn't have that much energy, you know, I could tell that he was feeling sort of like everybody was kind of in charge of the house and he kind of wasn't in charge anymore. And I was making dinner and I realized that the knives, now not everybody's going to be able to use a knife, but you know, this is just an example. But I realized that the knives needed to be sharpened, and that was something I always remembered him doing. And so I just set all the knives down in front of him and said, hey, you know, can you do this? And he just got such pleasure out of that, and, you know, felt like he did something. You could just see the difference in his face when he was doing it.
He was feeling useful and productive, which is what most of us want to feel, especially when you've had a life of being busy and doing all those things.
Right. And another thing that was real easy when he didn't have a lot of energy, you know, we had a kind of a unique family dynamic in that my great nephew, his great grandson, was living in the house with him. Mm-hmm. And, you know, before he got ill, you know, he was active with him and they would do things in the yard and things like that. But he just didn't have much energy to do a lot. And I found two flashlights and my dad came up with it and they did flashlight tag on the ceiling and they just took such pleasure from that. They just took
How
such
cute.
Joy. And that was just simple, just a flashlight in somebody's hand. And hey, look at that on the ceiling, you know, just plain flashlight tag.
That's great. I mean, any interaction, whether it's productive or not, is so important and key to keeping keeping everyone engaged and involved and stimulated. And
most interaction is good interaction.
Hopefully.
Yeah. But something simple, if your person is ambulatory, you know, just going for a walk in the yard.
Sure.
You don't have to go for a walk down the block or out to a, you know, park or anything, but just walking through the yard and, you know, discuss the different types of plants or, you know, obviously if this person took pleasure in mowing the lawn or something like that, you know, oh, hey, the lawn looks great, you know, just bees, you know, looking at the bugs, capturing a bug. I mean, I know it sounds kind of, I don't know, maybe childish, juvenile, but those little things, you know, help bring people back to maybe a time when they were children. And
there's a reason there's a saying, stop and smell the roses. You know, most of us worry and rush through our lives. So when you finally can take the time to look at and enjoy and absorb all the little minute, wonderful things, you know, it's important to do that.
Yeah. I was thinking of one more thing. We used to remember, I think when we worked, when we worked at Farnham, we had those warm cloths that we used to roll.
Yes.
And scented. That was fun.
They were scented, right?
Mm-hmm, they were scented with essential oils.
Yeah.
And, you know, we had a steamer that we would steam them in, but you could easily just use some, you know, warm water with some essential oils in it and have them wring the, you know, the washcloths out and roll them. You know, the essential oils have a calming effect usually on people.
And I think some of them, because I think, you know, like you could use to stimulate, let's say, appetite, I think lemon or citrus, but it also serves two purposes because they're also getting their hands cleaned.
Right. Which, you know, which can be a task. You know, if you have someone who is, you know, overstimulated by, you know, having to get their hands washed. And
I think part of the thing, Marty, and, you know, you're more experienced with the, progression, but, I think trying to identify where someone is in the progression, you know, so that you know what they might be comfortable with. You don't want to offer or expect them to do an activity that perhaps is beyond their capability. But I think that's being sensitive and understanding where they're at.
That's a really good point. That is a really good point. Yeah, because you don't want to, you don't want to make someone feel bad because they can't do something. You know, there there are no mistakes in these little menial tasks. You know, if it's, you know, not going to harm them or, you know, someone else, and they might not be doing it wrong, or they might be doing it wrong, excuse me. You know, there's no need to make them feel bad. And then there, you know, there are people who are in the latter stages who might not be able to, you know, roll or towel or fold a towel or, you know, even stir some eggs, but they can be maybe present while you do that.
Right.
And
tactile interaction is important too at all stages to keep the touching comfortable, you know, touching or holding things or feeling things with, I know in some of our memory care households, we'd have different items, you know, very fuzzy, fluffy items and just different things for people to sort of play with or, you know, and it could sometimes stimulate conversation, but at least it's an activity and they're still engaging pretty much all five of the senses. I think that's kind of important.
Well, and we used to call that in the biz, we used to call that passive participation. You know, a lot of times families would be like, well, you know, my mom, you know, or my dad can't participate. He's, mm-hmm. you know, nonverbal and mm-hmm. ambulatory or whatever. And, you know, in the recreation world, you know, being present is participating. Obviously, you know, understand the environment, you know, if it's a really stimulating environment, you know, just keep an eye on your person and make sure that they're not getting overstimulated and it's not pleasant for them. But, you know, with quiet music playing in the background, or if you're making cookies, there's nothing wrong with handing them a ball of cookie dough to mm-hmm. just put in their hand, you know, the texture, the smell, and if they accidentally, you know, or if they put it in their mouth, it's not going to hurt them.
No, they're gonna, you're probably going to want some.
Right. I don't know about you, but sometimes I do eat raw cookie dough. It's probably against the rules, but I like it.
Whatever.
Cookies. Yeah.
I think the thing to remember, you just said it, rules. There kind of are no rules. It's a journey kind of into the unknown, and you're not sure by what route you're going to get there. And that's why it's important to be observant, study body language, see if you can tell if you're going in the right direction. Are they going along with it, or does it seem like it's making them more anxious? Mm-hmm. I read something briefly, and it says, touch often. Their souls can still feel love.
Right. You
know, even if they're not responding in kind, they're still receiving.
Right.
And that's important to keep that up.
Right. I don't know what made me think of this, but, you know, even having, like, you know, if your person enjoyed a glass of wine or beer or something like that in the past, you know, mm-hmm. what's wrong with having, you know, a few ounces of wine, you know, and doing a toast? I mean, it's simple, you know, if you kind of equate it to, you know, a children's tea party or something like that, where you're, you know, mm-hmm. pouring wine and making a toast to something, and, you know, maybe get a little bit more dolled up for the day.
Yeah.
You know, put some jewelry on that person, you know, have that man, you know, put on his nice watch and a nice shirt and sit down and have a glass of wine. It's an activity of daily living, but I mean, it's also an activity.
It's comfortable and it's known, and, mm-hmm. and that's what, you know, brings everyone a little happiness. And when the person you're caring for is less anxious and more content, then obviously it makes your job a whole lot better and the whole experience. Let go of the parameters and the boundaries and just go with the flow.
I agree. And, you know, something else that came to mind, I guess I was thinking of the wine thing, but I'm going with it. Now we have like the Dollar Tree and things like that where you can buy things for cheap. Mm-hmm. But you could, you know, you could just pick up a pack of like invitations and, you know, sit down with that person and, you know, say, hey, we're going to have a party. We need to write out these invitations. It doesn't matter, you know, if they put things in the right place or whatever, but the process of writing on the lines and then stuffing the envelope mm-hmm. and talking about the party and, you know, what are the foods that we need to, you know, get for the party and what's your favorite food and, you know, are we going to have wine? I'm all about the wine today.
You are, Marty. It's a little early.
Are we going to have, it can just lead you down a road of a, maybe a fabulous conversation that was.
Memories.
Yeah. And it could turn into something. I mean, it could turn into a week-long activity, you know?
Mm-hmm. You know, obviously one of the senses is taste. And there's a lot of different ways that you can help people at all levels for the most part, even towards the end. You know, putting in Jell-O if they're not eating a lot of solids. Mm-hmm. That can still be kind of fun and it still tastes good. Ice cream, ice pops, those kind of things. Our residents, they would love to sit outside with their feet in the baby pool with some ice pops. That to them was just like, that could go on for like the whole afternoon. They
That's
loved
true. It. And you know, and something is, and I'm sure, you know, if you're caring for somebody at home, I'm sure you already do this, but you know, just going out for a drive.
Yes.
Most of the time, you know, it helps the caregiver, just, you know, catch their breath. but also it's stimulating to, you know, see the different buildings and, you know, or if you live close by to maybe a place where that person used to live or, you know, plan a day trip. That person doesn't even need to get out of the car.
You're triggering all the memories for me. Our residents used to love the ride arounds where they would drive around because so many of our residents were from that area.
Yes.
They would go by the old homestead and they'd point out buildings that they remembered or recognized. I mean, just simple, fun things. I mean, most of the prior generations, you know, a Sunday drive was a real thing that the family did.
Yes. There's, and I wanted to just tell kind of a sweet little story. So I work part-time at our local Moose chapter, and I'm a bartender and a server. And there's a gentleman that brings his wife in once a week, and she has memory issues.
I bet she knows how to order what she wants to drink, though.
Yeah, she does. You know, he allows her to just be herself and order her food. And, you know, every now and then he might give me a little wink. He allows her to be as much of her as she can and has kind of clued us in, but she likes to pay us. So, you know, he allows her to pay. And if she gives us a little bit of money, we just, you know, too much money or whatever, we just flip it back to him. And but I think it's fantastic. And she goes everywhere with him. He allows her, you know, as much as possible to be independent. And
I think that's, it's key. I spent some time recently with a friend who was diagnosed a year or so ago and her husband. And, you know, it's hard, especially in the beginning. It's hard. The earlier stages are a little bit more difficult because the caregiving partner isn't exactly sure what they should expect. The person, and it got a little, you know, a little tense at times. And I told him the one thing that you have to find, and it's very difficult, but it's endless patience.
Yeah.
You somehow have to find the way to find a way to, when you get impatient, take yourself out of the situation, or, you know, if you are able to regroup, because it is very, very difficult. I think that's the one thing I saw, you know, with my mom and her mom, you know, when she was going through it. And of course, in all the residents and over the years with the folks we live with and spend our time with at our communities, having that patience is hard because, you know, you run out after a while.
Right. And knowing yourself well enough to put some things in place. Something I was going to say is, you know, in those beginning stages when people are just starting to develop the symptoms, you know, that's when frustrations for the person who has the disease comes out, because, you know, there's a part of them that's like, I know how to do this. Why can't I do this? As a caregiver, being clued in to those moments of frustration and being able just maybe have some things in your back pocket, per se, that you can kind of switch gears. Redirection. If they're in the middle of something and they're getting frustrated, just say, hey, do you mind if we take a break for a second? Did we mention the 101 activities?
I don't think we actually mentioned it, but there are different things that are available on the internet. Of course, there's caregiverresource.net, but lots of different ideas for folks at different levels or different stages of whatever memory impairment they're dealing with. And, you know, and it does touch, you know, the physical, you know, eyes, ears, nose. I mean, basically all the five senses. You want to keep them engaged as much as possible, keep them doing what they're comfortable doing. My grandfather would polish shoes all day long. That was a thing. He had been a chauffeur. That was part of his get ready. And he loved polishing his shoes and straightening his hats. And, you know, just like we've said before, sometimes it seems like a simple thing. And I think sometimes, and we've talked about this before, the caregiving partner sometimes does too much because it's easier or faster, more efficient. Well, that's not the goal. Should be to have the person you're caring for do everything they can possibly still do, kind of regardless of how much time it takes, unless it's dangerous or you need to be somewhere.
Right.
But, you know, keeping them doing an activity, if it takes them, you know, 30 minutes to put on a shirt, that's okay. You know, unless you're going somewhere, then start earlier. You know, give, right. allow the time for as much time as they need to take without being rushed and with accomplishing it. You know, help when they need help, obviously, with buttons or things. But
using your community resources, if you are, mm-hmm. if your person is a member of their community, you know, the best that you can, I'm sure people will know what's going on if you are involved in the community. But, you know, lots of like different churches and mm-hmm. volunteer organizations, you know, they just need somebody to stand at a sink and wash dishes during, you know,
yes. an event.
Or to help set a table for yes. an event. Or, you know, some of them have like bargain basements and things like that where they could hang clothes on a hanger. Yeah. That way they're continuing to do their community service that they've done.
Right.
And they've got people around them, and it might even be an opportunity for, you know, a caregiver to just kind of step away.
Absolutely.
And take a breath, just allowing them to continue to be who they are.
All those little things help them stay connected and also often are helpful.
Mm-hmm. And your friend is so lucky to have you. I mean, I know she's been a blessing in your life as well,
yeah, but sure.
You're going to be able to be there as she goes through,
yeah,
you know, that process. And, you know, you know her so well that you're going to be able to, you know.
Yeah, I understand that, you know, from people that we've, of course, dealt with for, you know, 20, 30 years, it's one thing to deal with it from a practical standpoint, but when it's your husband, your wife, your brother, your son, your friend, it definitely adds another layer to what the caregiving partner is dealing with.
Mm-hmm.
And I think our focus, that's why this is called Your Care Partners. We've always been focused on the care partner, the person providing the care, who often doesn't do for themselves what they need to be done. So, you know, it's important for them to be a little selfish, because they're kind of the important person in the equation. So they need to take care of themselves and mm-hmm. not put themselves on the back burner all the time,
mm-hmm.
on the front burner once in a while too, to do things that are comfortable. So asking for help at all, if it's available for family, friends, churches, other groups, or professional help, it's key to keeping the caregiving partner able to keep going forward as well.
So this podcast went by really quickly.
It did.
We're already over our time. What article are you referencing right now? I mean, said you were looking up.
Yeah, it's caregiverresource.net.
Okay.
Is the main website. And then it's 101 things to do.
There's another one called Recreation Resources. Online, and they've got all kinds of things for many different disabilities.
Yeah, as we talked before, while you're journaling, you could even either within the journal or separately have a list of things that you notice that they enjoy doing.
Goodness. So I guess we'll end it here. If you or someone you know is caring for someone, we want to let you know that we are here. We thank you for tuning in to WWER 88.1. You can email us at yourcarepartners@wwer.org. Thank you, and make it a great day.
Perfect. Bye. Take care, and take care of you.
Yes.
Bye.
Just know you're not alone, 'cause I'm gonna make this place yours. If you or someone you know is caring for others, please feel free to share this podcast with them. You can listen online at wwer.org.
Please send questions, concerns, or suggestions for future topics to our email, carepartners@wwer.org.
If you enjoy the programming on WWER, please consider making a donation. You can find out more at wwer.org/membership.